The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
Here's Bill Meyer.
Good morning and welcome to Wheels Up Wednesday. And of course, we'll be talking with Eric Peters in about 25 minutes or so and talking about what's happening in the automotive world. And there's an interesting story out there that that the new guy at, I don't know if it's Stellantis, but who would be running, the Chrysler and Dodge system. You know how we've been talking about how Chrysler Dodge has just been in big trouble? Carlos Tavares ended up being shown the exit door the other day. And one of the people who actually made Dodge great again a number of years ago, you know, putting out the Charger, the real Charger, not the electric vehicle Charger that they're trying to pass off as the Dodge Charger that they put fake sounds on to make you think that you're driving something other than a battery-powered device. But anyway, supposedly, one of the people who made Dodge and Chrysler great a number of years ago is coming back to run the company. And is there a possibility that, especially with a new administration coming in, that they can be brought back from the brink? Because, you know, when you made your bones and you made all your money selling big, beefy Ram trucks, you know, rolling coal down on the highways around Southern Oregon, you know, those kind of things, and Dodge Chargers and the Hellcats and all the rest of it, and then you're going to replace it with an anodyne, sexless, you know, electric-powered device like everybody else is having to do or trying to do, at least, and also all losing money doing it. Maybe it's time to go back to what was working. We'll see. We'll talk with Eric about that. Should be an interesting conversation. And if you have questions about cars and transportation, things on your mind, maybe thinking about repairing one, do you think a particular vehicle might be worth reviving? Eric's pretty good source on that, okay? So we'll do that. 770-563-3770-KMED. Now, Richard Emmons, the publisher of the Josephine County Eagle, Oregon edition, I guess the Oregon Eagle actually is the name of it now. And we're going to talk a little bit about the John West recall and dig into that a little bit further. But yeah, the recall election, man, it was not even close last night. I was at home and going on the Josephine County website, and it was just not even close. And the current unofficial election results, yeah, John West is gone. 62% or so, 13,413 people voted to recall him. 37% of the votes, that's a little over 8,000 votes, they voted to keep him in. All right, there's a number of ways to look at this. First off, like I had mentioned yesterday, Team Hissy Fit. Team Hissy Fit won in Josephine County. That's the way I look at this. And some people, when I would mention Team Hissy Fit, I think there's one guy who was saying, "Well, here it is, you're not an unbiased journalist," and this and that and the other. I said, well, first off, journalists aren't unbiased, okay? They just pretend that they are. I'm not a journalist. I'm a talk show host, and we talk about things going on. And I have my point of view, and I'm very, very happy to share that and also share yours too. But yeah, I thought that this was a Team Hissy Fit moment in Josephine County. And I think the hissy fitters, they wanted a scalp. They wanted a scalp, and they got it. And I thought that this was an overblown recall push right from the very beginning. If you recall, a few months ago, or maybe it was a little more than a year ago, I was against the recall of the mayor of City of Grants Pass. I didn't think that was a good thing to do. Let them do their term, and then if you have a problem, you know, then you can replace them, that sort of thing. Unless you have real evidence of real crimes, real things going on. But to me, right from the beginning, this lead petitioner Lily Morgan back thing, to me, just looked like a put up lots of smoke and lots of conjecture. And frankly, Lily Morgan, having been on the county Board of Commissioners before, to me, I honestly thought that she should have known better. Now, she'd know better. Lily knows how the county works. But the voters ended up buying the BS that they were selling, in my opinion. And, you know, to me, I'm not saying that John West was an angel. But the thing is, they took everything that they were angry about the entire board and put it on one guy. There's no John West empire in Josephine County. The decisions that were made by decisions of the board. Now, a lot of them are 2-1. Occasionally, they'd be, you know, all united on something. But you know, John West didn't run the county commission. He didn't run the county. He was a county commissioner on here. And, well, I mean, I'm looking at, you know, if you go to the Recall John West website, you know, that where the petitioners were putting up all their information, the first thing that was at the very top of the page here, lost the county over $6 million. Well, I know that's BS. I knew that was BS right from the very beginning. But there are people that continue to repeat the BS, and they like the idea of this BS, and so they bought the BS, and they recalled him. Now, you're allowed to, you know, your vote is yours. You know, far be it from me to, you know, call voters of Josephine County stupid. I would never do such a thing. The thought crossed my mind, though, or at least a lot of ignorance about how the process works. And even Lily Morgan should have known better. This was all personal, in my opinion. Other people disagree with me. But it said, lost the county over $6 million. John West has nothing to do with losing the county $6 million. And as far as the budgeting goes, remember, there's a budget committee with all the commissioners on it and then citizens on that. You know, it's just, this is insane with the claims that were made. And when I see a group go out there and start their petition off and at the, you know, and on their website start with lies, I know the type of individuals I'm dealing with. That's all. That's the way I tend to look at it. If they're not out-and-out lies, they're distortions. And Lily knows that. You know, Lily, oh, come on. But Lily, hey, Lily's happy. I'm sure she got her victory. You know, she was the lead petitioner on this. Lost the county over $6 million. Well, you know what this is about? They gave away the gun range. They gave away the gun range. That was worth millions of dollars. No, it wasn't. No, it wasn't. You have a gun range that had been a gun range for decades, right? What happens when you're shooting guns over land for decades? I see some people out back there with some brains going, lead, Bill. That's right. Lead. Lots and lots of lead everywhere. You know? So you're thinking you have a gun range that should have been sold for more than a buck or not given to the sportsman's club. And it's been a gun range forever and ever. And by the way, the police departments and the sheriff's departments use that same range for training. But people, well, they should have paid millions for that. They lost money. He lost money by giving that away. That's just one example. And it's just, what a pig ignorant. It's either a pig ignorant claim or just an out-and-out lie. You know it's a lie, but hey, it'll help with your political agenda. All right? That's just, you want John out? You don't like John out? You don't like him suing everybody or whatever the case may be. Okay, I get that. But don't tell me that John West lost the county over $6 million. It's impossible for any one commissioner to lose the county over $6 million. It's a collective board. And just the gun range, when they started off with the gun range, and you're starting off with the gun range and then the pipe fork, Bullstein. Yeah, this is the other one. Cut law enforcement and safety health services funding. Josephine County is running out of money. They had to cut some budgets. Repeatedly failed to follow the law and facing multiple investigations. And nothing came of any of it. Remember, we had various people. I was talking with Herman yesterday, and you had most of the ethics investigations were done by their former HR director. One guy is just like doing most of these. And the accusations end up being the punishment. And by the way, Jackson County hired this individual. Oh, well. hope they don't start doing ethics charges for punishment in Jackson County. We'll see. But anyway, to me, I thought they started off with exaggerations and Bullstein and lies to start with. And so I was thinking maybe people would see through the lies and the BS, but I guess, you know, lies and the BS are a lot easier to, it's a lot more fun. And another way of looking at it is, let's be honest with ourselves, it is a lot easier to tear something down than it is to build it up. And Josephine County voters, I think, have shown this. Josephine County is in fiscal challenge. I've been talking with Herman practically every week about this for the last couple of years, and all of the COVID money has run out, and everybody built everything up and threw a lot of money at it during the time when the federal government and the state were writing hot checks to the various counties. Well, happy times are over in that particular deal, and so they're having to cinch their belt. They don't have the kind of money or tax base that Jackson County does. And the now I know there was the hissy fit over the library district and everything like that. He caused expensive litigation. That was a board vote once again. And yeah, that probably wasn't such a good idea, you know, in retrospect. That's fine. But you kick him out for that. But you know what that really comes down to? I'm sure that was where the Democrats got involved in the recall. The Democrats like this one. It's like, oh, you're trying to take down our mosque. Because that's what the Josephine and Jackson County library systems really are. They are, in essence, political mosques for the Democratic Party. You know, everything about it is totally progressive, and everything has to be how to turn your kids trans. You know, that's what we do in public libraries today. That's the whole thing. And to note that is to get yourself due to recall, I guess. So we have all those kind of things. So I thought that the voters bought one, but the main issue, in my opinion, though, is that conservatives that put John West into office a number of months ago, was it a little more than a year ago? I forget when that happened. But the people that put him in office didn't show up for the recall. Turnout was pretty low. And I'm sure that's also part of the process. The break in the Republican Party, that the Republicans that wanted John West out, I don't know if it's the folks who used to be associated with the Republican Party, the people that used to run the Republican Party. I don't know, Nancy Trahearne and those folks. I imagine they probably weren't real happy about what's been going on there the last couple of years. As Holly Morton, in my opinion, has just been actually running an effective county, a party, whether you know, like it or not. I mean, look at what happened in the fall election, the November election there. But they needed a scalp, I guess, and not everybody's in agreement with those sort of things, and the Democrats are happy to join in and be part of that. So this is where we find ourselves right now. They needed a scalp. They got a scalp. The interesting part about this, though, is that I think it's at 9, 10 o'clock this morning. I forget where it is. John West's attorney, Stephen Yonkus, is going to be in court in Josephine County because they have that case, that hearing, about whether the recall was legal in the first place. Now, Yonkus is making the claim that this was not done legally, because when they took all the petition signatures, they just took a percentage of them. They took about 10% of the petition signatures and verified the signatures and made sure that everything was on the up and up. They're claiming that there are state laws that maybe haven't been looked at for a while that says that in recall elections, you have to verify all the signatures. Now, if that's true, this this may be gone. And if that happens, that's a tall bar. I mean, that's a tall bar probably to overturn the recall, but that would be an interesting wrinkle if it happens. You know, maybe Yonkus can pull a rabbit out of the hat. I don't know. But still, I don't think it was a... I don't think it was Josephine County's greatest day, but I have no doubt, though, that that Scott Stoddard over at the Daily Courier is practically wetting his pants. So good for you, Scott. And Lily Morgan, Lily, I think you know better, but I think this has been a personal thing for quite some time. There's not been a lot of love between the West and Lily Morgan camps. Just saying. It's 24 minutes after 6. This is the Bill Myers Show. You're on KMED 99.3 KBXG.
'Twas the night before...
Hi, I'm Matt Stone with Stone Heating and Air, and I'm on KMED.
26 minutes after 6, 770-5633, if you wanted to join in. I was looking forward to talking with you. We'll have a little bit of open phone time, especially after the 7-10 conversation with Richard Emmons from the Josephine County Eagle, the Oregon Eagle, rather, replaying old old tapes, as it were. Rogue Valley Times reporting yesterday. Interesting story. Another individual in Southern Oregon, much like John West, the subject of a lot of incoming. If you just join me, John West does appear to be recalled, not even close, like, you know, 2-1. 2-1 practically on this one. Not the way I would have voted. I can't say I'm surprised. Because, you know, when you're not having that that big voter turnout with Trump, unfortunately, I got to tell you, this is the part that has irritated me about a certain percentage of Republican voters. They're like emus, the emus that poke at the shiny object as long as it has Trump on the name. If there's Trump on the ballot, dunk, 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 and they'll poke at it and vote. And then when you're outside of Trump and you don't have Trump to dunk, 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 drive the turnout, and then they go back to sleep and watch Fox News again. I know that's not necessarily you. I'm not talking about you, but I just can't help but notice those sort of things. And you'll have these big issues that are coming up in the spring elections, in the May elections, and then Republicans are, oh, I don't know anything about this. Well, gee, you can't do a website. You can't ask a few questions. You can't make a call or something like that. And, you know, everybody always wanting to be spoon-fed. While Democrats, on the other hand, will tend to be much more effective at just, you know, getting organized and going out there and talking about why we have to recall or get rid of or, you know, vote this devil out and vote our devil in. You know, that kind of thing. And so I think that drove some of this, too. I don't think the turnout was particularly good. And a lot of election fatigue. But, you know, that's just the way it goes. Still, the vote of the people is the vote of the people. And the people get it good and hard. And, I mean, look what's going to happen now. Spend $60,000 in Josephine County to do the recall. And now you're going to have a conservative board with Ron Smith and Chris. You know, and Chris is going to be there. And they're just going to do their thing. And voted in another conservative. They're just going to appoint a conservative, but it won't be John West, I guess. All right. 770-5633. We can talk about that. Anything else in your mind? But the other story I was going to mention is, you know, the other person taking a lot of incoming is Michael Williams. Michael Williams, the board member on Medford 549C, and Nick Morgan reporting in Rogue Valley Times, Medford School District calling for holding state weapons laws in schools to the same standard as courtrooms after the Jackson County District Attorney's Office determined that no crime was committed when a Medford school board member possessed sharp instruments during meetings and while on school grounds in his capacity as an elected official, but never used them as weapons. Yeah, DA's office on Tuesday afternoon announcing not filing criminal complaint against a school board member, Michael Williams, in connection with claims brought up last month that Williams, who works as an agricultural hemp inspector, was seen with a pair of shears and a knife on a work belt while at board meetings or otherwise on school grounds. Oh, yes, they're having a hissy fit. I'm sure that the Brett Champion crew, they're going to want to present to the board, and they're going to want the board to vote to ban concealed weapons and everything else because, you know, this hasn't happened. This has not happened yet in Medford 549C. They want to make it all a gun-free zone, even for concealed weapons. There are some that would like to do this. I'm sure they'll try to leverage this, just my opinion. But you can see where they want to take this. But the point is that just because Michael Williams had sharp objects doesn't mean that they were weapons. I mean, what? Are all the scissors that are over at Medford 549C, are they all those little kitty scissors with the little plastic tips on them? Because we can't trust 17-year-olds with actually sharp objects? Apparently so, you know, according to the Medford School District. But anyway, so they investigated this. And remember, I was I thought it was nonsense that they were trying to charge him with this one because I'm going, okay, what happens with people that come on the school grounds that are maintaining things and have sharp knives and drills and things that you can poke eyes out with, and you can run around and run around and run around. I mean, just because something could be used as a weapon doesn't mean it is. And that's more or less what the law says. And so they can't go after Michael. And rightly so, they shouldn't go after Michael. I mean, should you be arrested and charged with a crime for having a baseball bat? Yeah. Well, if you're on the baseball team, that's okay, right? But if you're a baseball bat, and if you have a baseball bat, you bring it in there and you start swinging it at people because you want to cave their skull in, then it's a weapon. And that's what the law more or less says. It understands that real adults can have hemp knives on their belt, and you're not a threat to the kids, a threat to the children, and the safety, the cult of safetyism. But quite interesting. I was in touch with Michael last night. I said, hey, you want to come on the show and talk about this? And he says, yeah. He'll come on the show tomorrow on Conspiracy Theory Thursday, so we'll talk a bit about these issues. I guess he has to be careful. He says he doesn't think he's out of the woods yet, because even though the DA is not going to charge, and the DA made the right decision, but oh yeah, you know they're going to want to come after any kind of a concealed weapon or whatever it is, even though he didn't conceal it. It was right out there in the open. Like I said, I wouldn't have done things the way he did, but still, I do wish some adults would stand up in this town. And he stands up and they want to cut him down. 6:32, let me go to the phones here for just a moment. Hi, good morning, KMED. Who's this?
No, I got 2 points to make if I don't get hung up on again.
Okay, is this Gene?
Yeah, it is.
You know, Gene, I'm glad to know you're still alive. I was actually putting out the word, we were wondering if you were okay a number of weeks ago. I'm glad you're here. And by the way, the only time you get hung up on is if I think you're done talking and I move the show along, okay? Just understand that.
Well, when you hung up on Lucretia, you also hung up on me and you knew that I had something to say. But anyway...
Well, if you end up getting... Now, come on, I'm glad you're here, but if you're going to start going off... If you're going to start the conversation with, if I don't get hung up on, you make me really want to hang up on you, and I don't want to do that, okay? So just get to your point.
I've got 2 points. One, Lily Morgan and Dan DeYoung brought in electric buses in Grants Pass. Waste of money. And also, Lily Morgan wants 5 commissioners in Jackson and Josephine in order to destroy both counties.
I would agree with you on that, in respect that Lily and others were part of that 5 commissioner thing. They wanted that. And they were in kind of a hissy fit. They were not in a very good mood after the after losing that. And then after being turned out, especially in the city of Grants Pass this, earlier in November. So, yeah, I have a feeling that had something to do with it. And a scalp, there needed to be a sacrifice made. And John West was the sacrifice.
It's time to sacrifice her to a recall for being an idiot and a Democrat pretending.
Well, she's not elected though. She's working for the city of Gold Hill. It's the way that works. Okay. All right, Gene, thank you for the call. I'm glad you're okay and good hearing from you. Okay. Be well.
All right. Goodbye.
Yappy. All right. I am so glad. Now see, she did start it off with the old name Grumpy Gene. I'm glad you're here. I always wonder what happened to that. You know, we wanted to make sure and keep the cast of characters in the upright and locked position. This is the Bill Myers Show. Wheels Up Wednesday with Eric Peters. Next.
You want price transparency? I'll give you price transparency. Joel here with Butler Ford and Truck Center. And from now through the end of December, I'm posting every invoice on every single new...
To you, they're great customers.
You're hearing the Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMED.
20 before 7... Eric Peters, automotive journalist at epautos.com. He is back in the house. Eric, how you doing this morning? Welcome back.
Oh, I'm good. We got a lot to talk about today, Bill.
We sure do. We also have people want to ask you a question or two about various vehicles. And by the way, to get in line, 770-5633 in order to talk with Eric. Couple of things on top of this. Let's see. Top of your website this morning, helping out General Motors. Okay, so General Motors has its hand out to whom this time?
Again, well, to the state of Michigan and to the city of Detroit. They want $350 million, apparently, to refurbish the RenCen, which is short for the Renaissance Center, which has been GM's corporate headquarters since the 90s. But now they're moving to another dig, and they're threatening the city, basically, and the state, that if they don't pony up $350 million, they're just going to demo the whole thing.
Okay, since when is it the state of Michigan's job to repair General Motors' corporate headquarters?
Well, since when was it the obligation of the American taxpayers to bail out a failed automaker, viz. GM? You know, and I'm not picking on GM because this is unfortunately the way things are done now in America. We've become a corporatist country where these gigantic corporations are able to use the government to pad their pockets. And you and I and everybody else out there, we're the ones who get to pay for that.
Yeah, well, I guess the same thing happening here with, and we've talked about this before, but I'm going to have to pick at the scab. I love how so many of the right-wing guys are going, man, Elon Musk, he's one of us. Now, no, he's not. He's partnering up to Trump and everybody else because, and this is why all the tech bros are out there writing hot checks to the incoming Trump administration. Oh, yeah, we're going to help out with your inauguration expenses and this and that and the other because they know this is where the corporate favors will come from, just like it did with the Biden administration. Unfortunately, that's just the reality of that corporatist system that you were talking
about.
Sure,
and just to back it up with regard to Musk, the latest news is that Musk is wanting Trump to rescind the reporting requirements for incidents of crashes involving autonomous vehicles. And I wonder who that's going to benefit.
Ah, well, I would imagine all those companies that want to deliver transportation as a service, like Elon Musk and, of course, the Amazon guy. What's his name? Bezos. Yeah, Bezos.
Yeah, I mean, it's been particularly embarrassing to Musk because, of course, he was the first one to come out with his autopilot self-driving tech. And proportionately more of Elon's vehicles have been involved in accidents than any other because there are only a relative handful of them that are available from other manufacturers.
Yeah, well, minor things like decapitations as they run into the back of semis, you know,
sure.
Stuff like that. Yeah,
sure. So, you know, it's astounding to me, too, because, 2 years ago, Elon Musk was completely vilified by people on the Trumpian side of things, right?
Mm-hmm.
And now, all of a sudden, you know, a hair-plugged man good, right? It's just very astonishing.
And it does get irritating. And it's not that I don't think that Elon Musk is a creative guy. He is, okay? I'm not saying this. It's just the disingenuousness of, I think the other day he was saying, well, as part of Doge, we should get rid of the $7,500 per EV tax credit, right?
Mm-hmm.
This, after he built his company with those tax credits and the carbon credits that that he sold to the other car companies that were still trying to sell cars that we could afford, that the people actually wanted. And so it just makes, as you say, Eric, it makes my teeth hurt that this is just being done and we're just all supposed to be getting on board with this.
Yeah, I mean, he's a very smart grifter. You know, you don't get to be worth $50 or $60 billion by being a stupid man, and he's not a stupid man. And having profited from that rent-seeking grift of the subsidies and the carbon credits now, he wants to pull the rug out from under all of the others who are desperate to climb on board that sinking ship.
That's right. You know, hey, I got mine. You don't need yours now because we've got this handled, you know, with the electric vehicle devices. So, anyway, I don't mean to get on Trump. I'm not even getting on Trump because there's nothing wrong with having a committee with Ramaswamy and some people to try to figure out the more efficient ways of doing it. But you can't help but see the undue influence that the corporate titans are looking to get this time around.
Sure, and rather than efficiency, I'd rather just have the government get out of these things that it has no constitutional, no legitimate, and no moral authority, in my opinion, to be involved in. I don't want the EPA or the DOT to be more efficient. I want them to go away.
Yeah, indeed. Talking with Eric Peters, epautos.com. It's a quarter before 7. Helping General Motors. Eric has that whole story up in there. I was reading the other day that the changes over at, it's not Fiat Chrysler, it's Stellantis, but, you know, Carlos Tavares ended up having his head handed to him the other week. He's gone. And you're writing that there may be a possibility of people coming in from the old Dodge Chrysler that might be able to save the brand? Or what are we looking at right now?
It's a fact. They're bringing back Tim Kuniskis, who some people listening may be familiar with. He was the guy who previously ran Dodge when Dodge was still a successful company that was selling models like the Charger and the Challenger with the V8 and a number of other vehicles that are under the Jeep and Ram brand labels. Anyway, he was eased out or retired. Nobody's sure exactly what happened, but he left the company after 2023 when those cars were gone.
Well, he had the wrong view. He had gasoline in his veins, in other words, right?
Right, exactly. He wasn't a good fit with the electrification agenda, let's put it that way.
Sure.
Well, the electrification agenda has proved to be absolutely catastrophic for Chrysler and for Dodge, and also for Ram trucks, by the way. You know, the sales of Ram trucks have plummeted since they pulled the Hemi V8 out. So they're bringing Kuniskis back in to run Ram trucks. And Ram trucks is critical for them, you know, even more so than Chrysler, Dodge, and Jeep. If they lose that, they've lost everything. So it's really good news that they're bringing back a guy who understands the business, I think. And I think because they're bringing him back, there's a good, if not a strong chance, that they're going to bring back the V8 engine, too.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yep. And now, are you hearing that from inside sources, or is this just a conjecture on your part? What?
Yeah, it's not conjecture. You know, you can still get, as a 2025 model now, the Dodge Durango still has the V8 as an option, and both the 5.7 and the supercharged 6.2. So they haven't gotten rid of the tooling. They're still making that engine. And the vehicles, like the Ram truck, I mean, it was made originally to have that V8, so they could just, you know, nothing wrong with the inline six that they brought out as the replacement for the V8. The problem is that the people who buy Ram trucks and who buy Chargers and Challengers, they don't want an inline six. They want a V8. That's what sold those vehicles.
They want the big engine. They want the grunt. That's the whole purpose of having a Ram truck.
Exactly right. Okay. And the sound, frankly. I mean, I know it may not sound, it might be incomprehensible to people who don't get it. But, you know, to people who like the sound and the rumble and the feel of a V8, it's not just the power. That inline six actually makes as much or more power than the old V8, but it does not sound like a V8. It doesn't feel like a V8. And that matters to the kinds of people who buy Chargers, Challengers, and Ram trucks.
Are they doing anything with the diesel engine models of Ram that you're aware of?
I don't know. I haven't had a chance to look into that. The diesel thing has become hugely problematic in that it's just not worth doing anymore because the cost of the diesel to the consumer is so high that it only makes any sense if you're pulling a heavy load regularly, and in that case, it might pencil out.
But it is an awful lot of fun when you're, you know, you're kind of getting hopped up and you have done some unauthorized modifications to the fuel.
Sure.
You know what I'm getting at? Rolling coal.
Sure.
We've all
sure.
seen those trucks. You know that.
And
I'm thinking to myself, I'll look at a big Dodge Ram that is just putting out smoke like a like an old locomotive back in the day, right? I'm thinking,
yeah, but you know, the 1,000-yard view of this is that they're beginning to understand the nature of the existential crisis, and I think they are beginning to push back against this compliance obsequiousness that has been bit by bit and piece by piece destroying the car business for the last 40 years.
Eric Peters with me, 770-5633. Eric, let's get some listeners lined up for you here in just a moment, too. 770-5633, let me talk with you, get you all ready, and we'll talk with Eric and get your questions on next.
Remember when you began
at 24.com. This is News Talk 106.3 KMED, and you're waking up with the Bill Myers Show.
Out on the open road with Eric Peters, automotive journalist at epautos.com. Taking your calls here, too, at 770-5633. Vicky's in the Applegate. Vicky, you have a 1940 Ford. So a nice classic Ford, and you wanted to talk with Eric about what? Go ahead.
Hey, Eric, how are you doing?
Good.
Yeah, my father passed away a year ago, a little over a year ago. But I remember as a kid, he had a 40 Ford that he always wanted to restore, and he was never able to do it until just a couple years ago. So he had it built up from the frame up. He had it restored inside and out. I don't know the size of the engine, but it is completely clean. You could eat off the engine. Mm-hmm. I mean, you open it and it's chrome and just beautiful.
Was that the flathead era, Eric?
That's it'll probably be a flathead 4 or a V8, depending on which, you know, which engine it came with originally.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is what is something like that worth now?
Well, you'd have to check out value guides for that. One place to start, are you familiar with Hemmings Motor News?
No, I don't have internet or cell service where I live. I live up in the country.
Okay. Without a computer. Huh.
Well, you know what you could do, Vicky, is head over to the library, to town library, the library
Excellent.
Closest
yep.
to you, and do a search with that. And she could go and probably get an idea, wouldn't you think? Eric?
Yeah, and another thing to do, I'm assuming you probably have some sort of a specialty car insurance policy on the thing.
Well, I don't know exactly what my dad had on it. I know he was in his late 80s, so he didn't drive it around a lot. But my brother said that it was worth like $30,000, but it seems to me like, you know, restored from like the frame up, it might be worth more than that. I'm not sure.
Well,
yeah,
maybe. Well, more than likely, he had what's called an agreed value policy on it that's issued by a specialty insurer. I have a policy like that for my old muscle car, And that company will be able to give you a very good idea of what the current market value is. So probably in your dad's paperwork somewhere, he's got an insurance policy, and that might be a good place to start looking.
So why don't you try that, Vicki, okay?
Okay.
All right.
Sounds good. Hey, you guys have a good day.
Hey, thank you. 770-5633 with Eric Peters, and we have Matt. Hello, Matt. You have a question. Go ahead.
Yeah, I do. Eric, I've heard you talk a lot about these trucks sticking in these four cylinders with the turbos and all this. I'm a normally aspirated guy. And I'm just wondering, with the technology available, what is the downside to just putting V8s in there, even if they're smaller, so someone can get a, you know, a normally aspirated truck motor that doesn't have all the bells and whistles? Because to me, every time you add something on something, it just creates another problem you might have to pay for down the road for service.
Sure. Failure. The only downside is compliance. You know, the reason that the larger engines, and it's not just V8s, it's also V6s, naturally aspirated, are being replaced by these little turbo fours is because, hypothetically, theoretically, when it's not under boost, the smaller four-cylinder engine has less cylinder volume, so it's moving less air, and the result is that you have less in the way of carbon dioxide being emitted, as they call it, out of the tailpipe. It's not so much the, you know, the emissions that have to do with air quality. It has more to do with this whole carbon dioxide climate change boogeyman thing.
Now, I just wanted to interject, if you don't mind me interjecting, Matt, you're talking about an older pickup truck, aren't you, that you have?
Well, I do have an older truck. I've got an 82 GMC, and I've hung on to it all these years, and the more I hear Eric talk, the more it makes me want to keep it.
Oh, yeah. Well, I guess what I was getting at, though, is that you don't have to smog that, so he can, there's no smog test for that particular one, no I&M, you know, here for that, Eric, so something that old.
Yeah, you should be able to get antique plates, and even so, 82, the only thing that would have probably would be one catalytic converter, probably the old pellet-style converter, and maybe an EGR valve and an air pump under the hood, and that's pretty much the extent of the emissions on that thing.
Was on the thing.
Oh.
I won't there you go.
I won't tell anyone, okay? I won't.
Well, I mean, you know, he can, you know, like you said, they're exempt at this point, and you know, even if you wanted to keep that stuff hooked up, you could use a modern monolith-style cat in place of the old GM pellet ones, which were terrible. High-flow dual exhaust instead of the Y-pipe thing that they put on those trucks back in the day. And all of these things will make it more efficient, more powerful, better gas mileage, and all of that.
All right. Hey, Matt, thanks for the call. 770-5633. It's Wheels Up Wednesday. Dave, you have a question about your 1991 pickup truck. What are you thinking?
Yeah. I have under the dash, there's a wire that goes into the ignition switch, and for a while I could jiggle it, and I could start the truck from this. Right now, the only way to start it is to jump the solenoid with a screwdriver.
Now, is this a 91 Ford, right? 91 Ford?
It's a 91 Ford, straight six, runs beautifully. It's just that, and I've changed the lockout on it, the switch out on it, and had a graphite. Works real smooth now, where before it was like, no, you needed vice grips to turn it. But it's now, that's all freed up.
So what's your question about the wiring, though?
Well, the wiring, it goes into the switch, into the steering wheel. How do you fix that?
With a lot of work. You got to disassemble the steering column and trace down the wire because, you know, you've got an old vehicle with a poor connection somewhere. And you basically have to just look at all the wiring and figure out which one is the one that's loose or hasn't got a good connection or something, and correct it. I think your solution is better. I mean, that's what I would do. Why bother with the whole massive disassembly project of tracing all those wires and taking apart the dash and the steering column?
So why don't you just, instead of just jiggling the wire, why don't you just install a permanent switch just to hit the starter, Dave? Why don't you just do that?
So what you're saying is put in a button that I could push to start it.
Yeah.
I probably have a friend that can do that.
Yeah,
that's really simple and really inexpensive. You know, obviously it's not original and correct, but it's totally functional and it's cheap.
Because, taking apart those steering columns, I've done that with my Vanagon a few times, and that's a pretty simple steering column by comparison to what you're dealing with.
What's nice is it doesn't have an airbag.
Yeah, exactly. But it's still a lot of work. I have to tell you, of all the work that I've ever had to do on any of my older vintage vehicles, Eric, is that the electrical work can sometimes be some of the most frustrating, trying to trace out wires and you have wires. You got bad grounds, especially, you know, that sort of thing going on.
Yeah. You know, I mean, that happens after 30, 40, 50 years. It's just inevitable. It's part of owning an old vehicle.
And sometimes easier just to bypass it. Okay. Eric, before we take off, what are some of the reviews you've been doing here recently? Because last week we were talking about the Dodge Durango and how that was a great vehicle that was. Right now, though, you are featuring the 2025 Buick Enclave, and you had an interesting statement about it. It is like the largest vehicle with the smallest engine, I guess, or there was some term that you came up with. What is that?
Yeah. You know, Buick was famous for making very big vehicles. You know, most famously, you and I can recall the Electra 225, which was 225 inches long.
Yep.
Big, big, big car. And it had a big, big, big V8 because you needed to have a big, big V8 to move a vehicle that big and that heavy. Well, the subject of this this article is the Enclave, which is the biggest Buick you can get right now, and it's almost as long as a 225, not quite, but it's close. It only has a 2.5 liter four cylinder engine, if you can imagine that.
Wow! Does it make as much horsepower as the old big V8s, or not?
Very close. You know, it's hard to compare the old SAE gross to the current SAE net standards, but the four cylinder engine makes 328 horsepower, and I can't remember off the top of my head what the old Buick 455 made in top high compression tune back around 71 or 72, but it was probably about the same, very close.
Yeah, and great style, though, those old 225s, that's for sure.
They were just impressive roadbound dreadnoughts, and having that big V8, I think, was equally impressive. Now, again, this is an example of the car industry having to figure out ways to continue to build vehicles that are compliant and at the same way operational. You know, this is a three-row crossover that weighs more than a 225, if you can imagine it, about 4,500 pounds. So how do you move 4,500 pounds when you can't even put a V6 in the thing anymore? It used to come standard with a V6.
Yeah. Well, I guess lots of boost, right? That's what you need.
Lots of boost. They put this little engine in there, and they put a turbo on it, and they apply a lot of boost, and the result is that you get 328 horsepower and a lot of torque, and it feels like a bigger engine. The only downside is it sounds like a four-cylinder engine. And not that there's anything wrong with the sound of a four-cylinder engine, but to me there's an incongruity. If you're in a big vehicle, the sound of a little engine just doesn't quite fit.
I know. I mean, a four-cylinder engine in a motorcycle, that sounds pretty impressive, though, right?
Well, yeah, and it's appropriate. It's a high-revving, high-pitched sound. But when you're in something big, you kind of want that bass, low-down, rumbly, kind of, you know, that muscular sound that's missing, and you can't get that out of a four.
Oh, well, just know that about the Buick Enclave, other than that very competent car, all right? My favorite article that I've been reading, though, and I think you just need to touch on this briefly because people have to read it to believe it, and this has to do about the headset or the headrest. The headrest that the goal now is to get inside your head with a headrest reading your brain waves, right? Tell me about that.
Well, when I first came across this, I really thought it was something from The Onion because, no, it can't be real. It's real. There is an aftermarket company that's developing this technology to passively scan the brain waves of the driver to determine whether he's nodding off, whether he's in tip-top shape to operate the vehicle. So they wonder why people aren't buying new cars. This is an example. This is one of the reasons why people aren't buying cars. If I want an EEG or an MRI, I'll go to the hospital. I don't want to get it from my car.
Well, if they actually do put this headrest that's able to read your brain waves, the interesting part about it is who owns the data? Because you know that's what they want to do these days. They want to sell your data. They want to sell your thoughts, don't they?
Of course they do. They want to monetize everything, and they want to control everything. So now I guess your car is going to be transmitting telemetry about your neural activity, and if it isn't in alignment with whatever the powers that be decide to be the right brainwave frequency or modulation or however they put it, then they'll either charge you more for your insurance premiums, or maybe they'll just turn the car off entirely because they'll say that you're not mentally fit to drive.
That is pretty wild. Is there anybody that's actually contracting to put this in a car yet?
Apparently, Toyota, Honda, and some of the other brands are in talks with this company. It's called Numo, and there's a link to it on my site if people want to check it out for themselves. And absolutely they're going to do this because they are now like all falling all over each other to show which one can be the safest and the most advanced when it comes to driver assistance technology.
But the more of this driver assistance technology, the more you get to the point where you will not be allowed to drive.
That's it, exactly. And by the way, you know, this thought occurred to me the other day. If you need assistance to drive, maybe you shouldn't be driving. Why do we even bother issuing driver's licenses to people if people need assistance to drive a car?
Amen, brother. Amen. Are you right? That, as far as I'm concerned, Eric, you have won the interwebs, and so I'm going to give you the real American salute for that. If you need driver assist, maybe you just need someone driving for you, okay?
Yes,
somebody else doing the driving,
yep.
All right? Let's grab one more here. Good morning. You're on with Eric Peters, EP Autos. Who's this? Welcome.
Good morning, Bill. Good morning, Eric. Michael Shaw.
Hey, Michael. What do you want?
Good morning.
Is there any hope that somewhere in the near future they're going to kill the ethanol mandate? Because I use my Harley as an example. I use an ethanol killer in my Harley, mm-hmm. and I get a 10% improvement in my gas mileage when I get rid of ethanol.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, it'll never happen. You know, Trump is, like all the politicians, beholden to the agribusiness cartels, particularly with regard to what's going on in Iowa politically. Now, of course, Trump is a lame duck at this point. He's not going to run again. But Vance will. You know, and Vance is not going to alienate the farm lobby in Iowa, which is the one that profits from all this ethanol stuff. So unfortunately, we're kind of stuck. And the only solution that we have available to us is to find a station that sells real gas and put real gas that's not 10% ethanol into the tanks of our beloved motorcycles and old cars.
All right, Michael, I appreciate the call. Thank you for making it. And a couple of text messaged questions in here, Eric. From a friend of mine says, does Eric think that there's a market for a simple truck? No bells and whistles, just simple and reliable. Can anybody do that today?
I know there's a market for it. Do you remember how popular models like my Nissan Frontier, the old model, the old Ford Ranger, the old Toyota T100 or 1000, I can't remember what the name nomenclature was. They made these things in scads, the Mazda B2000, the Chevy Love. They were everywhere. And I would bet you everything I've got that if Toyota could put the Hilux Champ into dealerships in this country, and that thing sells for $13,000, they wouldn't be able to build them fast enough to keep up with the demand.
And finally, the same person adds, road rage detector that will shut down your car if you aren't mellow. Could you see that with that headrest reading your brainwaves?
Hmm? Well, sure. And, you know, I think we talked a couple of months ago about technology that Ford has patented that would essentially do just that, that would monitor passing traffic for signs of road rage and aggressiveness, and then tie that into the connectedness of everything. You know, all these cars now are transmitting and receiving data all the time, and they can be controlled remotely, and that control can extend to turning them off at the whim of the corporations or the government that controls them.
Hmm. So there's no soy button or no soy button.
Yeah, pretty much.
I wish there were, though. Wouldn't that be great, a soy button? All right, turn the soy machine on. That kind of thing. Hey, Eric, thanks so much. I'll tell you,
sure.
We're going to have a very special episode of EP Autos Wheels Up. It's going to be Monday. Monday is the final show that I have for mm-hmm. the rest of this year because I'm going to be off on holiday break here. And so
yep.
you've agreed to come on, and so we're going to have Wheels Up Monday instead, just so you know.
Yep, and we're going to get to talk about the Camry Hybrid, which is interesting on a number of levels. That's what's being dropped off for me tomorrow.
All right, looking forward to it. We'll catch you then. EPAutos.com. We'll see you Monday. Thanks again.
Thanks, Bill.